little BG on me. I do HR, means human resources. Here at TAC, my name is Eric Rossdale. Some people call me Cool Eric. They called me that once. Some young people, too. Some young person did that. I love people, to say that another way. I love people. And that one's got a little more fun to it, doesn't it?
TBTL!
Thought I was shame eating in private.
What is shame eating?
I don't think we have enough time for that tonight.
As I tried to explain before, you cannot get honey from a hornet's nest.
I just don't think there's any science to support that, buddy.
There's some very basic science out there supporting that. Trust me, pal.
What a fun, terrifying joke.
That's science. These are facts.
In science, we call that a hypothesis. You find something to back it up and we can talk. Now, if you excuse me, I was watching Mama's Family.
This will be blown way out of proportion. You have my word on it.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome everybody to a Wednesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Here we go again.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
You want to do a make-believe radio show in a room somewhere. I'm telling you, there's no money in that.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, a cloudy, rainy, wet, typical December morning here in the otherwise beautiful Pacific Northwest. I don't know if that's, I feel like I have a cold coming on. I've got these warm slippers called Acorns on. You know what they say, starve a fever, warm your feet during a cold, I think is the age-old adage. Is that part of being 43 that now I am more susceptible to? I feel like it's like the third cold that I've had this year, this winter, which is not usually my thing. I don't have any young children. That's a feedback loop that many of our listeners have been able to break out of. Your kid goes to, daycare or school, they get sick, they come home, they make you sick, and then it just keeps going around that way. Anyway, I don't know. Is it the cat, maybe? Is the cat bringing this in?
There is something about the soul of a cat.
Just a quick moment update on the Bay Kitty, a.k.a. Murder Cat, a.k.a. Olive. She was sitting right outside the door of the broadcast center a couple minutes ago, just meowing. So I opened the door like, hey, do you want to come in? And as I opened the door, she just bolts in terror. Like, I often joke that when she sees me walking down the hall, it's like I'm wearing an outfit made of cats that I've hunted and used for their pelts. I mean, that's the level of fear that she shows sometimes around me. And other times, she wants to climb all up in my business. And she doesn't even know my Kool-Aid. Here's the Kool-Aid on episode 3046 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Man, it is Baby Yoda's world, and we just live in it, you guys. But did you know, calling Baby Yoda Baby Yoda is like calling Frankenstein's monster Frankenstein? That can't really be the name of that character from The Mandalorian, because The Mandalorian happens after Star Wars. So unless old Yoda got a hold of some kind of time machine, I don't know. We'll talk about it. Maybe the most interesting part of this whole thing, the most dazzling of deets, is that Werner Herzog, the director and sometimes actor, is in The Mandalorian. And his response when he was asked about the Baby Yoda is the most Herzogian response that you could ever imagine.
I've seen it on the set, and it's heartbreaking.
I've been listening to that clip all morning. And it's the only thing making me sort of able to feel happiness in the midst of this illness that's befalling me, of this terrible cold. So anyway, we'll play that for you. Also, speaking of meme-y things, Joe Biden decided to playfully nibble, a.k.a. bite, his wife's finger during a campaign event.
Johnny, that really hurts!
And it's becoming a whole thing, so we'll talk about that too. Plus emails and V-mails, and this guy, longest running Cobra of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He's got hair chutzpah and broad-based appeal. His voice is like a combination of Fergie and Jesus. I mean, just listen to this. That's exactly what would happen if you combined Fergie and Jesus and then they made that sound, or even this sound.
Yeah!
He's Andrew Walsh. He's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
I'm actually baby Andrew. I was thinking those sounds that you played of me, actually, I could see them being in the Yoda-verse or the Star Wars-verse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Boy, me even calling it the Yoda-verse really gets me even more excited for you and I to get into a conversation about modern Star Wars, because I can't think of two men who are more equipped for this conversation that's coming up later today.
I can't think of anything at all related to that topic that could possibly frustrate the listeners.
I know.
Would it be that neither of us have seen The Mandalorian?
I know. And can't remember
that a starting point?
And can't remember some of the most basic facts of the movies we have seen. I mean, your name's
and
Luke.
Are dealing with, if I sound a little low key at the top of the show, one, it is that I am feeling a wee bit under the weather. Nothing too bad, though. But it's that as that intro tape package was playing, I glanced over at my iPhone and I realized that I cracked it real bad.
Oh no.
Like I dropped it this morning and I picked it up and it has kind of a sort of protective, not like a full on, you know, one of those otter cases that's just like shatter, you know, basically makes the thing completely foolproof. I have a smaller one that's a little bit of help, but not enough. And I dropped the phone and I picked it up and it looked fine, but that's because the screen was dark when I picked it up.
Ugh.
And now if the screen illuminates, I just see just a vicious crack running right down the middle of the phone and spiderwebbing in the far northeast corner right over the Waze app, one of my most used apps. And so I am – now the question is – now this is the thing I will say that's positive about this. The phone was already cracked for months, but it was down in the bottom, I'll call it the southeast corner of the phone. And I'm kind of proud of myself that I didn't just take it right in and fix it then. Because you know I can be sort of a little bit persnickety about these things.
Yeah, I hate a cracked screen. It's a very eventually your brain gets used to it. I had a cracked screen for a while on my old phone, and I thought, I'll never get used to this. I need it fixed right away. But eventually your brain just starts filling in the gaps, and you get used to it.
I did a very – I feel like it was a real Andrew-y kind of thing, which was I – long story, more boring. I had this one kind of cover on there that was very styly. It was sort of like a leather, which, again, let's talk about the guy who's all on his high horse about not eating high horses. And then he's like, let's get a leather case for the phone. But anyway, it looked cool. It was an Apple product, but it didn't – it actually was very problem prone. Like the corners of it became kind of weird, if that makes any sense, and they'd catch in your pocket. Like there's just like little part where the case has to make a kind of awkward turn so as to create room for the speaker on the bottom of the iPhone.
Okay.
And that little place, that cutout, I guess you could call it a bevel of sorts. That bevel, the leather that was around that area would get kind of distressed and then start coming off and then just become like this weird, like almost this is a gross comparison, but just like a old weird toenail or something, and it would just get caught in your pocket. Geez. So I took that off for Andrew 1.5 days before getting a new case, and in the 1.5 days I dropped the phone 11 times and really, really messed up the sort of lower part of the phone. But it's mostly out of my field of vision, and this is where the Andrew-ness of it things came in. I thought, you did that to yourself. Your punishment, your mortification is you now have to have this as your phone for a while. Like I made that decision, which is a very un-Luke decision. I practice self-care in the extreme. Some would call it narcissism. And I just never punish myself about stuff like that. I'm just like, well, time to get a new phone. And I didn't do that. And so on some – and that was 6-8 months ago. So on some – in some weird universe, I feel like, well, at least I didn't get fix the phone and then just do this again. It's like this thing – I've been kind of limping it along for a while.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that when anything becomes even slightly hair shirt related, you think of me, your friend Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't eat all your broccoli. Go to your room, Andrew. That's what I say to myself.
Yeah, the crazy part about getting caught in a real Andrew loop is you're mad at yourself because you didn't eat all your broccoli, and then you finish it and you go, I ate way too much broccoli.
Oh, I ate too much broccoli. So let me ask you this, though. This is a new enough phone that you will just get the screen replaced on it, right? You don't need a whole new phone.
See, now this is where This is where Captain Luke is showed back up. By the way, I just realized my new intro to you should be, he has hair shirt, chutzpah, and broad-based appeal.
Right.
This is very accurate to you. Yeah. This is where old Luke the super possessor is starting to make an appearance, because the thought I had, this was all unfolding in, you know, 5/10 of a second in my brain as I was looking at the phone, sadness that I had cracked the phone, but then has it been long enoughness that I could maybe, because this is an old phone, like old in air quotes, in the world of iPhones I have an older one.
Generations out?
A few.
Like, oh, I think really? That surprises me.
I know. It surprises even me. It doesn't have the fancy camera. It doesn't. It's not even of its generation, which I'm going to say is like 7 or 8. It's not even the big one from that generation. Because for me, I don't need a phablet in my life. Like, I don't watch enough stuff on my phone. That's not true. I stare at TikTok for 6 hours a day now. But regardless, to me, the important thing about the phone is, can I slip it in my back pocket? Is it small enough that I can just like handle it easily? So this was, I kind of, again, in an uncharacteristic move for me, I didn't go for the, like, you know, for the full on like gold package with this phone. So I guess my point is I may toddle down to the Verizon store, and actually, you know what else, I need to talk to them about some other things, because I was paying the bill the other day and I realized I've been paying for a hotspot with them that I don't even physically have and haven't had for like a couple of years. There was a minute where I was like, when you and I were doing the show, and I believe you were still in LA maybe, mm-hmm. and I was like having internet problems in Port Townsend, and I thought, like, someone told me, oh, you got to get a hotspot, and I went out and got one of these from the store and had no idea I'm still even being charged for it. So I got to go talk to them about that.
That's a bad feeling.
I got a busy afternoon is what I'm trying to say to the listeners.
Yeah, I like the way you're going to – again, I feel like – and I'm not saying this to neg you. I maybe because I had a birthday recently, I've just been thinking about my age so much and like how – I don't know, the conversations I'm having seem like conversations I would have like snored through if my dad and uncle were having them. And I guess that's not – let's not use this as a clip for a promo for our show. But it just sort of sounds like, you know, like, oh, yeah, well, I got to go down to the Verizon store. I'm sorry. Is it Verizon? Who's your
– It is. That's
I got to go to the Verizon store. I got several things I need to meet with them about. I'm wondering if I can sit down with – my dad is on a kind of a first name basis with – the people that he just lovingly refers to as the geeks, apparently, like anything. And again, I'm not saying this to make fun of him, but he just like he loves that. Who has the geek service? Is that Best Buy?
That's Best Buy.
He just has those people come out for anything at this point. Like I think that they just come over for coffee sometimes. Yeah. Like he just loves it. Like
Bob is very lonely.
Problem with the remote control, because the remote controls that he has, like I do not have whatever degree you need to run them. They have screens on them. They connect to 400 different devices, and you need to know how to program in. My dad gets nervous handing me the remote, because if anything goes off a tiny bit, he won't know how to get it back either. It's just – it's a very complicated system. And I swear – I may be slightly exaggerating here. I'm pretty sure he's had the geeks, as he calls them, come out just to support him with his remote control from time to time.
Do you know that I came – extremely close to calling Camaro Kev on Thanksgiving morning to ask him a TV-related question?
I think that he'd be proud to hear that.
I told him about it when we were watching the Hawks game the other day. My parents, who do not avail themselves, my parents would be like, the geeks, what do they cost? $20 an hour? My parents somehow set their TV on a closed caption setting, and it wasn't on the TV, it was on the cable package, and couldn't get it off, like could not turn it off. And we're trying to watch the Macy's parade and the dog show, and it was very annoying. And everybody took a whack at it. Addie was online trying to find out how to do it, as was DFTB. Finally, my dad called my parents live in kind of, you know, a small town, and so they don't have like a normal cable service there. It's something that's a little – it's called Wave Cable, which I think is kind of a smaller, more local thing.
Okay.
And I was like, there's no way they're going to be there on Thanksgiving. But my dad called them, and sure enough, they were there. And then my dad put the guy on speakerphone and goes, like, okay – Jerome, you're you know, there's 8 people in the room here, so a lot of pressure. You got to do this. And I was like, Dad, leave this guy alone. It's Thanksgiving. Just like, Which, don't you feel like that's a real dad move, too, for some reason?
It does seem like a dad move. I also, real question here, how friggin' relieved were you when Addie and David couldn't figure it out either? Because I'm guessing that you took the first pass at it and then couldn't do
it.
Oh, you didn't. Okay, because then if the Youngs can't get it.
I call the geeks for that.
Yeah. I was going to say, if the Youngs can't get it, then you got some cover.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I know well enough at this point that I'm not the person for that stuff. And so they couldn't quite figure it out. I figured DFTB would be able to get it just because of his youthfulness.
Yeah.
But they couldn't figure it out. But then the guy's on the phone, and I thought there was just no chance of this working out because the dude on the phone also didn't like know off the top of his head. He had to go into some manual like
really?
He was reading over the phone, and it involved turning the cable box off. And within 1 second of turning the cable box off, hitting menu on the remote control.
What happened? How did this happen?
I believe that there was a technician who came out to do something unrelated to the cable box and may have put it on at some request by my parents. The funny part was my mom was like, I like having it on because we watch a lot of British shows and I sometimes don't know what they're talking about.
Okay, fair enough.
Which is reasonable.
Yeah.
So I don't know if my parents asked him to turn it on and then they didn't know how to turn it off, or if he just accidentally hit something, or if it was an unexpected consequence of whatever the guy was doing. But we had to basically like hack into the mainframe and toast the quarterback. Like it was this whole – it was like, you know, it was trying to like, you know, get to Mike Tyson or something. It was like up, up, down, down, turn off the box, hit menu in the same moment you're turning off the box, and then this like – black screen with like text on it comes up, which is like you've entered the matrix of the cable box. And I actually videotaped this. It's on my phone. I can't play it for you because of technical difficulties, but I was a triumphant yop went up in our house. Arguably the highlight of Thanksgiving was when my dad, let's be honest, with some assistance from David, actually got into the thing and got it to turn off. And then it was just like, we were so happy. And then about an hour later, I was watching something and I thought, what did they say? I couldn't use the closed captions for this. I'm not just saying that to be funny. I honestly was like, that would have been not, because there's so many people at our family Thanksgiving. And like, if you're trying to watch football or whatever, it's like the TV is, the volume of the TV has to be low in the background. This is one of my mother's like, by the way, if you think that it's boring listening to parents talk, how about someone talking about their parents talking? That's a whole other level of this. So a big thing with my mom is that the volume of the TV can never – first of all, she doesn't like the TV being on at all. That's like – and if she had her druthers, it would – other than maybe the Macy's parade. Once that's over, she wants the TV off. She feels like it's competing, I'm going to be honest, with her for attention. She doesn't like that. But – So one day she was doing karaoke a couple of years ago, but it was when the football was still on. And so we had the football game on, but muted. And she was mad because people were watching the football game instead of her version of Stand By Your Man by Tammy Wynette. But anyway, at the very least, the volume of the TV is never allowed to be up very high because that's yet another competition. And so in those moments, I was like, I could really use some closed captioning on this.
Yeah, so many things I want to say. Loud TV. I'm actually with your mom on that at gatherings.
Yeah,
unless everybody's
like
totally quiet and everybody's zoned in on the football game. I don't like the sound of a TV that's kind of blaring and competing with people, especially if you can't hear anything out of it. Because the volume just continues to raise. You know, everybody just gets louder, then the TV has to get louder. Regarding the closed caption thing, though, so it's somewhat frustrating to know that it was such a complicated thing to turn off closed caption that shouldn't be that way. But it's also somewhat of a relief to know that, this thing was really jacked. Like the fact that you had to get Jerome on the phone, and Jerome is now asking his boss, who's now calling up and literally on the phone with Mr. Wave, who designed this cable box, trying to figure out. But aside from this weird glitch where the cable box, you have to hack into it to turn this on and off. Is there also a more convenient way just to flick on the closed captions, or this is it? Like, if you want closed captions, you got to do it this way.
Well, that's a good question. My parents, a normal
call
smart
the
TV,
geeks.
Which as we,
sorry,
as we learned yesterday, I'm going to write that down as a possible.
Yeah, here, I got it. You tell your story. I'll write it down.
you know, a normal TV, which as we learned yesterday, a normal smart TV, which we learned yesterday is probably spying on us, is definitely sending information about our viewing habits back to the manufacturer. You know, normal TVs have closed captioning on that you can turn on and off pretty easily. So I assume that that should be the case. But I will also mention this about my parents. And I love my mom and dad. I don't mean to give their foibles so much attention on this Wednesday morning. But there is always a chance that my dad did, for some reason, because it was $3 cheaper, buy a TV that doesn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this because, and I hope that this doesn't ruin one of the games we're going to play for the TBTL Winter Games, mm-hmm. because this is one of my more famous stories. But my dad famously, when we were kids, and first we didn't have a TV because my parents thought it was satanic. Then we had a TV, but it was in the closet most of the time. Then eventually we got a TV that was like out in the living room in a cabinet, like there 24/7. But my dad, first he built a lock for it so that you couldn't plug in the power.
The original and then we parental figured out, control.
Yeah, really. And you know what's funny? My friend Peter's dad did the same thing. His dad's a jeweler. He's very talented with his hands, and he made this very elaborate wooden block that was carved out, you know, in between. So it was two pieces of wood that came together and would lock with a padlock. And then in the sort of like carved in between the two blocks was a cutout the exact size of the plug-in for the TV, to plug it into the wall. And I would come over to Peter's house sometimes. This eroded as well, but the TV would literally be locked with this piece of wood that his dad had fashioned.
Wow.
My dad did something kind of like that. I forget what it was, but then he bought this device that was a remote control that would render the power on the TV not usable, but then I found where he had hidden the remote control in their bedroom. It was a real cat and mouse game.
Yeah.
My dad would come home sometimes from work, and he would feel the back of the TV to see if it was warm.
Oh, man. Oh, God.
You know that move?
I don't know that move, but I'm getting a bad feeling in the pit of my stomach just like picturing him coming home and walking right up to the TV and knowing that you were just watching it.
And it's like my dad's not an authoritarian type of dude. He's actually a real sweetheart. But, you know, they were very strict about their religion and very much not about us watching TV, which I have to say, like, I don't mind that looking back on. I think it was probably one of their few good parenting moves. But it would be like, yeah, come home and we would like have a whole system of like turn the TV off, and then he'd walk and he'd like feel the back of the TV and be like, you guys are watching TV.
Then you have to get a fan. You're putting fans on the TV trying to keep it cool.
Just, things get you've solved one problem, but you've created a lot of other problems. Yeah. The power bill goes up. So anyway, this is a long way of saying when my dad finally decided that we were going to buy a VCR, because everybody had had VCRs for years, and I believe we would check a VCR out from the library sometimes. Also, those were the days where you could rent a VCR at the store. Mm-hmm. Like, if you rented a tape, you could also rent the VCR that mm-hmm. came with it.
Yep.
And so I remember when he brought home a VCR, and we were all excited, but because it was, like, probably $20 cheaper, it was not an R. It was a P. It was a VCP.
Oh, yeah, right.
It only played tapes. It did not record, which is the most fun part about having a VCR in those days was you could just record stuff off of TV. And it was so like, you know, that was the whole thing. You'd record movies or TV shows or whatever it was you wanted to watch. Red Shoe Diaries, if you're my Uncle Johnny. And we had the only VCP that I'd ever seen. It was made by a company called Lloyd's. Hey, Lloyd, do some playing for the sad Burbank children. It was just like the weirdest thing. And so in my mind, it's not completely out of the question that my dad might have bought a TV at Costco, because that's where they purchase every single thing in their life except for discounted meats. That's woohoo. They get those from, I believe, Fred Meyer. Man, that was the other thing. I took a picture of this too. I opened their fridge on Thanksgiving. And by the way, my dad in particular worked really hard on the Thanksgiving meal this year. He kind of got in charge. He was sort of in charge of the turkey and stuff. It was delicious. They did a great job. I didn't have any of the turkey, but it looked good. Everything else turned out great. But I opened their fridge, and there was no less than 7 different partially consumed containers of marked down salsa. That was the main ingredient in their refrigerator.
This is the day of Thanksgiving. Was it a woohoo deal?
Oh, does the Pope shit in the woods? Yeah, dude. It was all woohoo salsa. It was all like different kinds of salsa, like pico de gallo type, you know, like sort of large. I guess the consistency matters.
Oh, the refrigerated kind.
That makes more sense. Yeah. So I'm like, why would you have a Woohoo deal on something that is like a canned item, essentially, can sit on the shelf? No, this is the refrigerated, so therefore the store needs to get rid of it because it's Thanksgiving.
It's a pico de gallo, and it's, I mean, they hadn't bought it. Now, listen, I don't think this was all purchased that day. I think this has been acquired over weeks and maybe months, but it was just weird to me that, like, the day of Thanksgiving, where I would expect to open the refrigerator and just see like a bunch of supplies for Thanksgiving, a bunch of butter, a bunch of other, you know, just things that are part of, I will come to your house and I will take all your salsa, pico de gallo. So it was like, I was just expecting Thanksgiving related items in there, and I open it and it's just, and it's like, I don't know why the fifth different kind of markdown pico de gallo had been acquired and why the first one was still in there, if it had been like half consumed. It was just an interesting tableau in that fridge, I'll tell you what.
We should just go to a break. I had a bit of a stock problem this Thanksgiving, which was I had like one small chicken carcass in my freezer with a bunch of like little
carcass
with like, I also save like the ends of carrots and the ends of celery as I'm chopping them up, because all of that can go into a stock. When you make stock, usually it's like chicken bones and then some celery and carrots. But if you're just like, if you're bringing celery home anyway and you're cutting off the butt of the celery instead of composting it, you throw it in your stock bag and then whatever you make.
I never knew that. And I always feel wasteful when I'm doing that. So thank you.
Yeah.
I also don't make stock. So that's probably a problem.
You can ship it to me. But I was like, oh, this is good. You know what? I don't have quite enough here. So I'm going to go across the street to Whole Foods. Our Whole Foods has – very few stores have this, by the way. So good on Whole Foods. They will sell chicken bones. Like, they had some chicken backs there. There was like $1.50 a piece. I bought two of them. The young woman who was ringing me up kept staring at it. She rang it up, and I saw the thought process going through her head. And then she finally said to me, why is this meat so cheap? And I said, it's not meat. It's just chicken bones. By the way, what was in my cart that day at Whole Foods? One bottle of Jim Beam, two packages of chicken bones. It was...
Let's be honest, chicken backs.
Chicken backs. It was the...
Jim Beam and a couple chicken backs.
That's right. It was sad. Anyway, so I'm like, I'll just buy a couple of these chicken backs to make just to get enough stock for Thanksgiving. Then when I put it all in the pot, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a lot of stock. I let that thing simmer for like 7 hours. Probably some of the best stock I ever made. But I made so much of it, and we needed so much refrigerator and freezer space for Thanksgiving, both in prep and for leftovers. And I'm just like begging our guests to take stock home with them. They had Stockholm syndrome.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Now is that the show title? Should I write
that down? Yes, write it down, because you know what? Sorry, donors. Sorry, everybody. Sorry, Top Stories. We're ending the show right now. Where's Words by Doves? Yeah. It does not get better than that. Anyway, end of story.
Stock, so STOCK.
And then home.
HOME.
And then syndrome.
And syndrome. C-Y. Is there a hyphen there?
I don't know. I'll figure that out.
Yeah, we got time. Yeah, that was good, by the way. That was a solid spoof. But you're right. We should take a break. The listener's like, why wasn't it 10 minutes ago?
Yeah.
My parents are like, why did you do any of this show so far? Why did you have to drag Walt and Susie Burbs? I love them, but you know, they're quirky, as are all parents. It's your dad with the geeks, and it's my parents with the discount salsa. Mm-hmm. Okay, quick break, and then we will come back. And I'm actually so excited to talk Baby Yoda with you, Andrew, and not just because there's a Russell Wilson connection, but somewhat because there's a Russell Wilson connection. So we'll get into all that coming up here on TBTL.
I met him in a swamp down in Dagobah, where it bubbles all the time like a giant carbonated soda. S-O-D-A, soda. I saw the little runt sitting there on a log. I asked him his name, and in a raspy voice he said, Yoda. Y-O-D-A, Yoda. Yo-yo-yo-yo-yo.
Oh, Al Yankovic. Gotta love it.
Two on the nose, Luke. Two on the nose for your taste.
I don't get the reference. I thought you just wanted to play Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah, I did.
Hey, you know what? Let's A donor of the day you will not be until money you have given. Did I make it better?
I like
worse
that. No, that was good.
Let's thank our donors of the day. Henry Hsu of Los Angeles, California.
Oh, Henry.
And then Travis Worthington of Linwood, Washington. Mario Alonso of Miami, Florida. Oh, Mario, I am jealous. In the summertime, I am not jealous of the residents of Miami, Florida, but right now, as I look out on the wet weather here in the Northwest, I am jealous of Mario and the scene there in Miami. Thanks for donating. Juan Lopez of Shoreline, Washington. And then Anastasia, or Anastasia Hoffman of Cologne, Germany.
Oh.
I just freelanced the Germany part. There might be a Cologne somewhere else, but can we figure that it's probably the Cologne that's in Germany?
I would guess that. I could try cyber stalking her right now and just see what we come up with.
Okay. See if you can hack into her TV.
Okay. Yeah. I'll let you know if it's in German.
How about Laurel Link of McFarland, Wisconsin? I guessed at the Wisconsin part too, but I feel pretty confident.
I think it's just wee.
McFarland wee. Laurel. Anastasia, Juan, Mario, Travis, and Henry, thank you so much for supporting our show. Thanks for making this possible. Thanks for donating. It's funny, we're going to talk about Baby Yoda here in a moment. Oh, that's why you're playing this song.
Oh my, I didn't, subconscious man, didn't even think of it.
That's weird. And that's an Apple Plus thing, right?
No, it's Disney Plus. This.
Disney Plus, sorry, I get those mixed up. Disney Plus thing, which I think Disney Plus is like, I don't know, $5 a month, $7 a month. I'm holding off on it because I've hit my limit of dang things that I pay for every month. And by that, I mean the limit that I feel comfortable with. And so I'm very appreciative of these donors of the day that they have TBTL on that list, because we're all getting, you know, we're all getting hit up for stuff left and right. And it's only because of these donations that we can do the show. Were it not for the donors of the day, there would not be a TBTL. So thank you very much for donating. Thanks for being part of the show.
I've seen it on the set, and it's heartbreaking.
Hello, and welcome to Top Story.
Really great article by Brian Feldman in New York Magazine today. The rules for the Yoda discourse. Am I allowed to say Baby Yoda? So the hot new meme, as Brian writes, is Baby Yoda. Anybody who's been on the internet has seen this. I actually thought it was – I didn't understand how sort of global it was when actually the guy who goes by Cable Thanos, a.k.a. Josh Cashman, a.k.a. actual cousin of the person who portrays Mort, our agent – was putting out this kind of, I don't know, version of the Baby Yoda, kind of looking like Russell Wilson. And this was on, I believe, on Sunday or Monday in advance of the game. And there was some sort of, like, if it could get 33,000 retweets or some certain amount of likes or retweets, then the Seahawks were going to change their official, like, you know, images on their social to this thing. It took over Seahawks Twitter. And honestly, a big part, I think it was trending. I mean, it was a crazy thing, this Baby Yoda that kind of had like Russell Wilson's jersey on or something.
I don't know if I saw the original of this. You know, that really underscores for me how much I'm not following Seahawks Twitter. Like, I do follow Cashman, but that
one
missed
living.
Me. Yeah, and I follow some like radio sports hosts, or maybe a different person would say sports radio hosts, but it pretty much ends there for me, as opposed to the Browns. Like, I follow so many random Browns people who at like one point tweeted something angry about Hugh Jackson, and I'm like, you're my friend forever. And so I am flooded with anything Browns related, but I kind of missed this buff meme.
Well, I don't know how you did
it. I think I'm looking at it now, though.
And I will just say this. I know that the point of this conversation isn't to talk about Seahawks Twitter versus other sports Twitter, but it is – and this has come up before on the show. Seahawks Twitter is this bizarre and wonderful ecosystem of just people who are extremely online. in this way that seems generally positive. I haven't delved all the way into it. Oh, by the way, I'm embarrassed of something. This is another. Let me get my hair shirt on. I said something about TikTok the other day about how, like, what I love about it is it just seems like positivity. There's no comments. And then I realized the other day, no, there's a thing where you can comment. And a lot of these videos will have, like, 800 or 900 comments. I've never clicked on it because I don't want to see the comments. Mm-hmm. I don't think they should have comments. I think that's what I thought was great about that site, was that it wasn't a place where people could just be mean to other people who are just putting out, you know, silly dances or something. But when I saw that, I was like, I was scrolling through TikTok and I saw that little message sign, and I was like, oh my God, how did I think there weren't comments on this page or this site? Of course there are. But anyway, the Seahawks Twitter is just such a fun, weird place that is doesn't – it's like people who really like sports, but they don't seem to have – there's a – for some reason, maybe because it's kind of the leaders, the icons of the Seahawks Twitter movement are like kind of funny and a little bit self-aware. It just seems like a more fun place than – and I don't mean this to cast aspersions, but like then say Browns Twitter. I would assume that the Twitterverse for most football teams is kind of around football. And I'm not saying that there aren't funny memes and jokes and people don't have humor. But it's just like there seems to be something about Seahawks Twitter. Like I don't think that Baby Yoda Baker Mayfield takes off in the same way. I just don't think Browns fans would necessarily go in for it as hard as Seahawks fans on Twitter who are in this weird world would have. It's just – for some reason, the people like me that are in it, we delight in that BS.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think that you have to admit that there's got to be some bias in your perspective on this because you follow one, you know, one NFL team really closely.
Right. But I mean, there have been pieces written about Seahawks Twitter, like by the national media, about its about it being kind of. And yes, I'm a fan of the Seahawks. So obviously it's all like. You know, I'm interpreting all of it through that lens. But anyway, okay, so moving on from the sports Twitter side of this to the just like wider world, this Baby Yoda thing has just been showing up everywhere. And as most of you probably already know, this is a character from The Mandalorian. I thought it was just Yoda as a child or as a youngster, but that's because I've completely lost the thread on Star Wars and where any of these movies, TV shows, what have you, where they exist in the timeline. But, as Brian Feldman points out, Baby Yoda cannot be Baby Yoda because this thing happened. Let me get to the – I want to get this exactly right. Baby Yoda is almost certainly not the actual baby of Yoda. The Mandalorian is set after the original Star Wars trilogy, so Baby Yoda cannot possibly be Yoda. So that's a problem right there. In fact, Disney is super careful to only refer to this character as the child.
Yet they made a mistake in. Oh wait, no, I'm getting ahead of the story a little bit. Yeah. So right now, I guess fans of the show are still waiting to see if a like kind of proper name will be given to the child. What I was going to say wasn't there something else in this article that I didn't know about where. The Disney merch store, like the official merch store, refers to something like the Yoda species. And people are like, well,
yes,
Yoda can't be a species. Yoda's the dude's name.
Yeah. As Brian writes in the New York Magazine, that'd be like calling human beings the Brian species.
Yeah, which is like, I love that line.
Yeah. I like that he used his own name. I feel like this guy would really get our show. but yeah, so like. And to me, that question of the merch people calling it the Yoda species, that smacks of somebody who had to write some copy that was going to go underneath a bobblehead who was not working. Like, this is where you just didn't have, like, full sort of messaging. Like, you know, there's so many, like, something on the order of Disney Plus and The Mandalorian and all of the ancillary projects. It's so sprawling that just, like, somebody didn't get the memo that this is not Yoda. And that they're calling it the child. And I'm sure there were – I would love to see the internal emails – previous to this, I would love to see the internal emails explaining to everyone that they could get to that this is not Yoda, that this is the child, so that it would be consistent across platforms. And it's just like there's just some person somewhere, probably a subcontractor who works for a company that was hired to do some last-minute web help. Someone somewhere called it baby the Yoda species.
Mm-hmm.
Not really. Because also, that's not – I mean, you've already said it and Brian's already said it. That doesn't even make sense. Even if you know a limited amount – like Chewbacca is a Wookiee. That is a species. You wouldn't call it the Chewbacca species.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what Yoda is, actually. But I know that that's the name of the guy. It's not the species. Even I know that. And I know nothing about this stuff.
Now we get into the really interesting territory of this article you sent me, which is if Yoda is... Yes. So let's forget about Baby Yoda for a second, or the child, or Gimli. But let's just talk about the original Yoda. Is Yoda the first name or the last name? Because apparently there's some precedent set here in the Mario Brothers movie, which I believe Nick Jarin brought up on this show one time when you were out, and it blew my mind.
Yeah. They're talking about the Bob Hoskins live-action movie Super Mario Brothers that came out in 1993. Of course, it's based on, like, Mario Brothers, the video game and stuff. This had me thinking, Bob Hoskins, of all the people, is not someone I would expect to be in both Who Framed Roger Rabbit and the Super Mario Brothers movies. Bob Hoskins was, at one time, a very distinguished British actor. He remains so. I mean, I'm sure he's a good actor, too. This is not a criticism of him. But he just seems like a kind of like a serious actor person. And he keeps, you know, like the idea that he was in these two movies. I guess you could argue that Who Framed Roger Rabbit was kind of an experimental, interesting film for its time.
I will say, I've been talking about this lately. I don't know why it's been coming up a lot lately. Who Framed Roger Rabbit is the only movie I can think of that holds up better than I thought it did. There is so much that I did not know about the neo-noir genre and like the L.A. noir genre that I know now as an adult. And I went back and watched Roger Rabbit, I don't know, sometime in the last year, and it blew my mind. Like, the plot of it is about trying to save public transportation and not put in this giant highway that's going to destroy L.A. Like, those old
Toontown?
Like those old or yeah, Toontown, those old noirs and then some of the neo-noirs, even though there's a lot of obviously like kind of intrigue, sometimes the basis of them is a boring kind of municipal thing. Like, look at Chinatown. What's that about? It's about distributing water throughout L.A. Like, it's a totally municipal problem and the graft that goes along with it. And so it's amazing watching Roger Rabbit as an adult and realizing, like, oh, there's all these tie-ins to this broader genre that was totally lost on me as a kid.
I wonder if I should – I might watch that movie tonight, Andrew. You have – I saw it in the theater. I saw it at Oak Tree Village.
Yeah.
And was blown away at the time. But like you said, most of that stuff doesn't hold up. But I should check it out. So Bob Hoskins is in the Super Mario Brothers movie. But in that movie, apparently it's revealed that Mario's last name is Mario, which would mean that his name would be Mario. And I never thought about this because if it's Mario and Luigi and they're Super Mario Brothers
– yeah.
Why are they brothers that are named for just one of the brothers, one of the guys? That's a very odd naming convention.
Be like you and David and Sam all being called the David brothers. I don't know why I chose him over you and Sam. I didn't want to hurt any feelings.
He's taller.
And he runs exactly. That's right. That's his prize for running the marathon. But anyway, yeah, no, that's really weird. And then actually, I don't have the article up in front of me right now. Should we play that scene? I could open it up if you want to play the scene, or is it not worth it from the Mario Brothers movie?
If you have access to it, that would be fine. The thing I'm just reading more from Brian in this piece. We could apply the same logic to Baby Yoda. Yoda thus becomes that baby's last name, not his first name. It's possible that old Yoda's last name is also Yoda, and Yaddle's last name is Yoda as well. By the way, that's the other thing. Something about the Yaddle verse in here.
Yeah, I didn't even know about the Yaddle verse. I don't think I watched.
Yeah,
all the
I couldn't really follow prequels. That. That's definitely beyond my sort of my knowledge about these films. So basically, he's saying. It's because of what happened in the Super Mario Brothers movie, it's conceivable that Baby Yoda – we can call Baby Yoda Baby Yoda if we want to. And then there's also the fact that it doesn't matter is another component of this whole conversation. Do you want to play this Bob Hoskins
thing? Yeah, I want to play this tape, and then I want to read the line that Brian writes related to this. So this is the scene from, I guess, the Super Mario Brothers movie. It looks like Mario and Luigi are being booked at some, you know, police precinct somewhere.
Name?
Mario.
Last name?
Mario.
Okay, what's your name?
Luigi.
Luigi, Luigi?
Tom, Luigi, Mario.
Okay, look, how many Marios are there between the two of you?
There's three. There's Mario Mario and Luigi Mario.
Okay, I'm going to end it there. There's so much noise in that scene. It's a very chaotic scene. So anyway, Brian.
Like mushrooms. You got fireballs. There's Koopa Troopers. I mean, it's a whole thing.
So Brian now writes, according to this logic, we have three potential equally legitimate Yodas. Yoda Yoda, Yaddle Yoda, and Baby Yoda. How they relate to each other remains unknown. So
my favorite like little dazzling deed in this article, though, is the fact that Werner Herzog was interviewed about, because Werner Herzog is, I guess he's like the bad guy in this or something. And that he was interviewed about, we're going to keep calling him Baby Yoda. And it's just like at this point, and I really love Werner Herzog movies. Like Fitzcarraldo is one of my favorite movies. I'm like so fascinated with him. I really am. So I love that he just is this guy. But Werner Herzog answering a question about Baby Yoda sounds like Paul F. Tompkins doing an impression of Werner Herzog talking about the Trader Joe's on Hyperion in L.A. It's like, it's just so great. Let me play this for you.
Did you see the Baby Yoda that was revealed in the pilot yet?
I have seen it on the set. I've seen it on the set, and it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreakingly beautiful, and it's and I saw two technicians operating it remote. One was for the eyes and the mouth, and the other one was for other facial expressions. It's a phenomenal technical achievement, and beyond the technological achievement, it's heartbreaking.
By the way, I 100% get what he's talking about.
How so?
I'm the kind of person who is, I cry about weird stuff. Mm-hmm. And I could see observing this, like, you know, puppet Yoda and its movements being lifelike in real time because it's not CGI, which, you know, props to whoever made this.
Agreed.
Because it would have, I don't know enough about animation. My guess is that it would have been easier to just, you know, cartoon this in later. But I could see myself watching or being on set and seeing this little puppet being kind of manipulated is a weird word to use, but just basically seeing this thing that seemed lifelike, but that was in fact otherworldly. It's not like anything that is a real thing on this planet, but it's those big eyes. And I mean, it's very cute. I've been watching a lot of like memes and things related to this, to the child, but like, I could see having a strong emotional reaction from this. Maybe also it's my biological clock. I don't know. But I just am like, I feel like I totally understand why he described it as heartbreaking. I feel like I would be flooded with a bunch of emotions of wanting to protect this puppet, but also feeling kind of like, I know it's a puppet, but yet I'm having a strong feeling about it. And part of it is just like admiring its cuteness, and part of it is just heartbreak for how you know, how messed up the world is. Like, I totally feel like I vibe with what Werner Herzog is saying. Who doesn't vibe with him? The person asking the questions from the Hollywood Reporter or Variety or whatever it is, because she follows up with,
why is it heartbreaking?
I don't know. I only saw it on the set. I haven't seen it.
Now I feel like I'm kind of bad. I feel like Werner's, like, you know, on his heels a little bit here. Like, I'm just like, I feel like if I were the interviewer and he said that, I would just hug him and probably start crying and then be tased by security. But it's like, so he's giving this kind of weird Herzogian description, and then the interviewer is like, I guess you could say reasonably asking a follow-up question. And then I feel like he kind of backtracks
a little
bit.
On the set, I haven't seen it in the movie yet. So because I haven't seen it yet, in 2 hours, when I have seen it, I can answer it. But on the set, it looked absolutely convincing. It made you cry when you saw it.
Oh, man.
I also think that Werner Herzog does not have any – he just doesn't go in for half measures, right? Like, I don't think – has he ever said, it's fine, ever once in his life? Has anybody ever said, hey, Werner, how's the coffee? I realize it was kind of made early this morning. Oh, it's fine. No, he doesn't say – I'm not going to do a Werner Herzog imitation, but I can imagine him going on about how amazing it is or how terrible it is. But I can't imagine him saying, oh, it's fine.
The enormity of the flavor of the coffee leaves one
Only one choice, which is madness.
Try to look a chicken in the eye with great intensity, and the intensity of stupidity that is looking back at you is just amazing.
That's one of my favorite pieces of tape. Him just like fucking dragging chickens. I have a longer version of that. He hates how stupid. Well, I don't even know if he hates it. He is astounded by how stupid chickens are. Yes.
I love that, though. I feel like he would be an excellent podcast host.
Oh, yeah.
He has takes.
Yeah. Jesus, yeah.
He's got takes for days, and he feels them deeply. I just love – I'm with you. I just don't think that – he has no meh in him. That is not the Herzogian approach to life. It's like everything is great or everything is kind of bad, but no matter what happens, it's just – It's into my ears, it's sort of poetry the way that he describes stuff. I love him so much. I think he's a national treasure.
I've never seen it. Would you say that movie is Fitzcarraldo? I just looked it up while we
Fitzcarraldo.
Were. Fitzcarraldo.
Oh my God.
I didn't know.
Dude.
So that was I assumed that.
Klaus Kinski.
He started making dramatic movies, I assumed later in his career, because I always thought of him first as a documentarian, but that says it's an 82 drama, huh?
Yeah, it's about this guy. So there was a whole thing with Werner Herzog and Klaus Kinski, right? They were in a bunch of Herzog put him in a bunch of movies, but they were very close to killing each other. I mean, literally, I think it's a documentary called My Best Fiend that's about their collaboration, which was always sort of there were overtones of them literally. I think it was Herzog once brought a gun to the set with two bullets in it.
Oh my God.
And one was going to be for Kinski and one was going to be for him.
Again, doesn't go in for half measures.
No,
I stand
you got to respect it. So he goes So Fitzcarraldo is this movie about a guy who wants to build an opera in the middle of the Amazonian rainforest. I believe he wants to build an opera house. And in order to do it, he needs to bring all the supplies in on this ship. But then there's some geographical issue where the ship can't get the stuff off the ship and through the over the the mountains and the jungle hills. And so the movie is basically Klaus Kinski, aka Fitzcarraldo, trying to get the indigenous population and other people to help him drag this giant boat over a mountain.
Oh man.
It's wild. It's just such – and the soundtrack is great. There's this Popol Vuh song that I love. I've actually played on the show before. Maybe we can go out with it. Let's see if I can even – if I have it here on this.
Remember having this conversation with you. I remember being at TBTL. Floundered around looking for that song for a while because I didn't even –
I have it. It's called – I'm not going to play it right now, but it's called Alls – and forgive my German – Alls Liebten die Engel – Off Erden by Popol Vuh, and it's off the Fitzcarraldo soundtrack, and it is it's just kind of some weird instrumental music, but I love it. I saw the movie a long time ago, and I was in a real heavy duty Werner Herzog phase, so I don't know if it's good or not, but I found it to be really entertaining. I guess
I'd watch it. All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. There's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week I hope that it's from a female. Oh man, it's not from a female.
All right, any emails or females that are striking your fancy today?
Yeah, I got some good stuff
today. We're going to start calling you What do I, like, you know, you're not baby Andrew, or what are you, the adult, the middle-aged? What's your technical name?
Officially, my name is Andrew Andrew.
Okay.
So,
but why is my name Luke Andrew?
I don't know. Ask the writers. I thought this was an interesting conversation happening over on the TV club section of our Slack channel. Sarah jumped on there just to say, I would like to just say that the show Silk Stockings was actually a really good show with very decent writing, art direction, and the two leads had terrific chemistry. I would 100% rewatch this if it were available, and I bet it would hold up. I wrote back. I was like, I am so surprised to hear that. She said it was definitely advertised as borderline softcore, but it was so much better than that. My ex-husband and I watched it religiously. I'm tempted to bring him in here to verify it. She texted her ex-husband saying, hey, can you weigh in on this? This came up on the podcast I listened to. And he says, yes, it was good and had somehow fallen through the cracks of the 90s memory, a much more noir and sexier version of Moonlighting, probably because the leads repressed the desire. Oh, well, things get a little blue in that. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically saying that there was good chemistry, good sexual chemistry between these two, between the two leads, as opposed to Sybil and Bruce, the actors who had to pretend they liked each other on set, apparently, which I did not know that about Moonlighting. Did you know that?
Yeah, famously. Yeah, they famously didn't get along. Mm. First of all, glad to hear that listener Sarah can check in with her ex about things like that. Yep. That's nice to hear. It's good to that's the healthy way.
Well, she gets one a year, and it's only for important things. And this time,
ooh,
it was
sorry, you burned it on silk stockings.
I'm glad you burned it on silk stockings. So anyway, that's really interesting to me. And some other people chimed in as well and said, "Yeah, I remember that. It's actually a pretty good show. It's just marketed weird," which actually probably proves that I never actually watched it. I remember the commercials, right? Like I just remember seeing the commercials and being like,
"I knew my friend John DeYoung used to." Love it.
You actually John watched DeYoung, the show, who, huh?
Well, yeah, we were in probably like, we would have been middle school or something. I don't know what the era when it was out, but I know that he used to talk about it and it was on late at night. He also was the one who turned me on to Counting Crows. He said, yeah, you know, it's like, he was like a real interesting dude. I carpooled with him as a kid in middle school and then we were buddies and he was like this really funny, quirky guy, but he was real into like not death metal, but like he kind of, it was like he was sort of had a Beavis and Butthead quality to him, like not just the liking of the show, but the like liking of kind of just like very puerile, just like fart jokes and also like heavy metal music. But he didn't look like a heavy metal dude, like he didn't have like you know, he didn't have rocker hair or anything. But then one day he said, yeah, you know what I'm kind of getting into is this Counting Crows record. And I was like, I don't think he called it a record in those days, but I was like, huh? But he also loved Silk Stockings and would tell me about it. And I just was like, how is that even allowed to be on TV? But that's, I've never seen it myself.
I love that he is a man. I knew kids like this too. He sounds like he wasn't influenced by much other than what he liked. Like, he's a guy who kind of
100%.
Likes, I love, oh, man, I love kids who are like that, who are just kind of discovering their own things. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't fit that I like, that I really like Master of Puppets and I like Silk Stockings. And you know what? This Counting Crows stuff isn't so bad either. I'll bet you I'd like that kid.
He was really into this comic called Ralph Snart.
Hmm.
Ever heard of this?
No, I don't know.
Ralph Snart Adventures. It's a comic book, I guess it's still happening, written by Mark Hansen, published between 1986 and 1993 by Now Comics. All the characters are depicted as grotesque and ugly with bulbous noses and bulging eyes. So on one side of the ledger you have Ralph Snart, and on the other side you have... and it's one more night in Hollywood. Oh, interesting. My Adam Durrett sounds like Bill Clinton. Can you imagine Bill Clinton doing... Counting Crows.
Hey, let me share a couple more things with you because it's just a real good day for the mailbag here. I got an anonymous note here. It says, many, many years ago in high school, I worked at the skate deck in Everett. Now, this is the skating rink that I went to up in Everett over the weekend. I was talking about the you know, the preponderance of children that you'd expect to see there. But then every time you're in a roller rink like that, you always see one or two guys who are like really good at roller skating and they're zipping around really fast and skating backwards and like just doing their own thing. They're never there with a friend and they're always like kind of, what do you call that, like in Top Gun, when an airplane gets too close to another airplane?
Buzzing.
Buzzing. They're kind of buzzing by you. So anyway, Anonymous says, there are basically two kinds of people who work at the rink. The relatives of the owners, like me, that's why I'm keeping this anonymous, and quote-unquote rink rats, people who spend so much time there that they finally gave them a job. Also, I am very familiar with the guys, and it was always men who skate by themselves, skate backwards, and go too fast, etc. These guys thought they were quite the ladies' men and would flirt with the young women at the counter, but we thought they were creepy and old. So if you have any burning questions about what goes on behind the scenes at the rink, I've got answers, but not much goes on.
I'm raising my hands.
Yes.
We need to get this person on the show.
Anonymous.
Because I have a million roller skating. We can process their voice. We can give them the liberty, bibberty, liberty treatment on their voice if we need to. There's just because the roller rinks will always be to me this sort of magical place because of when I was spending the most time at roller rinks. That was for me even more so than the mall. And the mall has been coming up a lot on the show lately. And I know people, I don't know if you have these emails on the schedule today, but people have been checking in on that cutlery shop at Northgate Mall that went to. I guess I was right that it was Excalibur. Listener Nigel checked in. Famdemort checked in. I guess that this was a real thing. And it must have been a chain because I know Famdemort didn't grow up around here. So that was cool. I feel relieved that I somehow pulled that out of the back of my brainsicle. But my time of going to the skating rink was at the first – it was middle school for me, and it was like the first time I'd ever really gone and done things without my parents around. And it was always this thing of trying to hitch a ride to Linwood, which was a fur piece from where I lived as a kid. So I'd have to hope that Jesse Stevenson or Chrissy Stevenson or even Lucy Humanick, one of them were like going north. Mm-hmm. Sometimes Lonnie. Like, it'd be like, whoever was, is anyone going, and this is no cell phone, so it'd be me calling around on like a Friday or Saturday, like, is anyone going to Linwood Rollaway tonight? I guess I could have taken a bus too, but just being there was such a magical place that everything about it was amazing to me, and it remains so. It's like frozen in that state in my mind.
Yeah, I love that place. I've been there before, not to brag. I think for a couple of birthday parties in the past, but that's a really special place. I'm more of a, you know, Ken Moore Lane's first Linwood Roll and Skate or Bowl and Skate number two in my heart, then Genevieve number three. Okay, so actually, I would love to see. I'm going to reach out to Anonymous and see if they would like to be on the show. We can't disguise their voice, but that would be funny if we could. But I think it's safe. Nobody listens to this show. All right, I have one more voicemail for you here. This is from Brian. He's going to take us on a little journey. There are some. Swears in this voicemail. So if you're listening with children, turn it up, man.
Hey, dudes. It's the listener, Brian, from Tallahassee. I just wanted to call because three things have happened today that I just had to share with you, the TBTL crew. So I was traveling today. So the first thing, I got some sky jinx. I was traveling. I was on an airplane. I was at a window seat. I had a 10-year-old girl sitting next to me in the middle seat and her mom and little baby brother sitting in the aisle seat. Right when the plane started to take off, baby brother starts wailing, starts just screaming his head off. And, you know, I don't really know how to deal with that. So I just try to give this family some privacy. You know, I kind of like wink at the girl and her mom next to me, just saying like, it's all right. Like, don't worry about me. And I start reading my book. About 10 minutes into the flight, two things happen within about 5 seconds of each other. This little kid stops crying. And then I get a whiff of something awful. And I think, oh my God, this kid just shit his pants on this plane. And I can smell it. And everybody else around me can smell it. and I don't know what to do. So I just kind of like keep to myself. I'm kind of like looking around, trying to make eyes with anybody else, see if anybody else can smell it. I look over and I see, wait a second, this kid didn't shit his pants. What actually happened was that his sister opened up a bag of farts on the airplane. That's right.
Oh.
A bag of beef jerky.
It was beef jerky. Genevieve famously calls my beef jerky that I eat on road trips a bag of farts. She doesn't let me eat it often. I say it doesn't smell so bad, but apparently I should send this to Genevieve so she can do the victory dance.
Wow.
So anyway, it was all good. She was feeding her little brother beef jerky, and he was loving it. Okay, so that's one thing. Second thing, I had some shame eating. Once I finally got to my destination, Providence, Rhode Island, it's a beautiful city full of great restaurants. I just needed some shitty food, and I ended up stopping at 7-Eleven. I got a slice of pizza, 5 chicken wings, 10 little tacos, and an empanada. I brought them all to my hotel room, and after a whole day of traveling, I took a warm shower, laid down on the bed, popped on the MSNBC, now I'm eating all this food. It's a perfect coat hanger moment, and I just had to share it with you guys. Anyway, peace out. Bye.
That's a fun voicemail. I'm still curious what the third thing was. I think he said there were three things. But he also called back later.
When he went to the bathroom the next day after eating 11 taquitos.
Right. He did call back immediately after and left the voicemail saying that he apologizes he was doing the John Mulaney talk through your burps for that entire message, and it must have sounded terrible. I wouldn't have noticed if he hadn't said it.
Oh, man. I am like, I'll tell you what. That is so relatable for me, that idea of you finally get to the hotel room and you get your whole little scene going. And I've really found that actually over time of my traveling stuff, I leave the hotel room less and less now.
Mm-hmm.
Like I used to go down to the bar and see what kind of food they had, or maybe even go look for somewhere in the town to have a nice little dinner. Like, when am I going to be in, fill in the blank again? But I've now just become kind of a hermit where I'm and of course, eating what the listener was leaving out of that was the great likelihood is he forgot to get napkins at the 7-Eleven, because how would you remember that? And as he was eating all that, presumably on the bed, he realized, I've got to go into the bathroom and get a hand towel and use that as a napkin, which is both the most wonderfully decadent and also just feels like your life's going not great moment you can have. But then also having the TV on, as we've talked about on the show so often, although MSNBC is something I watch that at home and on the road, but also it's just fun to be in the hotel room and just flipping around the channels and just like watching all that TV that you wouldn't watch at home because it feels like a consequence-free environment. It's not a commentary on who you are as a person. I don't know why the idea of 7-Eleven pizza troubles me. I'm sure it's the same as any pizza – a slice of pizza that you get from that's been, sitting there warming. I don't know why 7-Eleven doesn't seem like a place for pizza to me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine it's worse than like what's sitting under the heat lamp at Little Caesars.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had it. I've been in 7-Elevens before where people are like ordering whole pizzas. Like I've seen them like kind of like package up a whole pizza for somebody and take it to go. In fact, I think I was waiting in line one time just being like, what is this mad hell? I just want to get my Gatorade. This isn't a pizza shop. But so I don't know. Some people are living that 7-Eleven pizza life.
Yeah. I 7-Eleven has historically for me been the court of last resort when it comes to food stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Camaro and I and Newman, RIP, we definitely, speaking of the Eagles, why did we do this? Did somebody live around the corner? I'm just thinking out loud here, not to be confused with the Oregon Public Broadcasting Radio Show. Think out loud.
I know the executive producer.
For some reason, I don't know why. Maybe it was just convenience, or maybe we were on our way to either a casino or Rick's or something. We would stop a lot at a 7-Eleven that was basically across the street from that Eagles. I don't know if it's still there.
It is still there, yeah.
We used to get cans of Sparks. That was a big thing for us, and which is like alcohol and energy drink.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would get things off of that hot roller. But that would usually – my memory is that that would be because a lot of other things had closed. Like I wouldn't probably start – even if I wanted to eat some real trash food, I wouldn't – my vibe wouldn't be to start at 7-Eleven. But I respect everyone's trash food game.
Yeah.
And it's just – everybody's got to do their own thing. And like I love the image of that listener just maxing and relaxing on the bed watching MSNBC eating that whole variety of food.
Yeah, as you know, it's not called pride eating. It's called shame eating for a reason.
Shame eating, what is that?
That's right. That was in today's intro. My goodness. Oh, I planned it that way. Or the writers did.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay.
You got that Fitzpatrick song? Wait, what's it called again?
I do. Fitzmagic, it's called, actually. And it just took over for Ryan Tannehill.
What's the name of the movie again?
The movie is called Fitzcarraldo, and this is from the soundtrack of Fitzcarraldo. And you've heard it before, and it's just not, I don't know, it's like probably not for most of our listeners. But it's very new agey, by the way. Like, the older I get, the more I understand my dad's penchant for, like, George Winston and other such kind of new agey instrumental music, which I used to just think was the dopiest stuff. And I'm like, I'm good for that once, twice a week. So, all right, we'll go out with this Fitzcarraldo music. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, enjoy your Wednesday. Stay dry wherever you are. And we'll see you tomorrow. Till then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
To drag a boat over.
Oh.
Tried to make it relevant to this one.
Of their flat brain, the enormity of their stupidity is just overwhelming. You have to do yourself a favor when you're out in the countryside and you see chicken. Try to look a chicken in the eye with great intensity, and the intensity of stupidity that is looking back at you is just amazing.
Power out.